everybody to a bonus episode of the Deckbox Cast. Over this episode, we're going to be talking about some of the Ikoria and Commander 2020 spoilers that have come out. All the spoilers we'll be talking about have come out since the last cast and up until Sunday, April 5th. So everything we're talking about is between the last cast and today. The entire commander list and the entire set is not out yet, but instead of giving you a 4-hour cast during next week when still not everything is out, I figured I'd give you guys some bonus episodes to hear my thoughts on some of the cards. So let's get into it, starting with the new legends from Commander 2020. Starting off with Gabby Nestwarden. This is the new Jeskai commander, the head of the Jeskai deck. It is 2 blue, red, and white for a legendary creature, Human Shaman, 2/5. That says you may pay 0 rather than pay the cycling cost of the first card you cycle each turn. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 2/2 red and white dinosaur cat creature token. So cycling tribal with a little bit of a token sub theme. It's definitely an interesting card. Not the type of card that I would find myself personally playing, but cycling being a cool mechanic and kind of a mechanic that I've seen enough people play as decks that maybe they want to switch to this as the commander. The one problem with the 3-color cycling commander is you miss out on 2 colors worth of cycling cards, but I think there's enough cycling payoff in this set that maybe this will be okay. Nonetheless, a very cool card, very interesting. Next up, we have a commander, the Saltai commander, Otrimi the Everplayful. This is 3 black, green, blue for a 6/6 legendary creature nightmare beast, and it has one of the new mechanics featured in Ikoria and in the commander set, which is mutate. So you can mutate Otrimi for 1 and Saltai, so blue, green, and black, and it says, if you cast this spell for its mutate cost, put it over or under target non-human creature you control. The mutate creature mutate into the creature on top, plus all abilities from under it. And Otrimi by itself has trample, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, return target creature card with mutate from your graveyard to your hand. So mutate is kind of a hard mechanic to explain without physically seeing the cards. But I'll do my best to explain it anyway. So if you mutate Otrimi onto another creature, we'll just say like a non-human 4/4, then if Otrimi is on top, you're going to have just a 6/6 trample still with Otrimi's effects. If you were to put Otrimi underneath the creature, you would have the 4/4 stat line of the vanilla creature that we're using in this example with the abilities from Otrimi of trample, and when this creature deals combat damage to a player, return target creature card with mutate from your graveyard to your hand. So mutate is one of the hardest mechanics to evaluate in this set because it depends on how many mutate cards are in the Otrimi deck and how many mutate cards they also put in Ikoria itself. Since these decks are themed around Ikoria the set, so there's going to be a lot of interchangeability and interplay between the cards. So any of the cards with mutate are a little hard to evaluate right now. Disregarding that, it's an okay card for its stats. Not what I'm interested though. Next up is a card that I'm definitely interested in. It's Jirina Kudrow, which is the Mardu commander. It's 1 red, white, black for a legendary creature, Human Soldier 3/3. And it says, when Jirina Kudrow enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 white Human Soldier creature token for each time you've cast a commander from the command zone this game. Other humans you control get +2/+2. So if Jirina is not your commander, or if it is your commander, it will still get this effect. And this is a card that I am potentially thinking of slotting into my Alicia Human Tribal deck, since it has the ability to make human tokens and it can buff my team There's a lot of cards from this list that might get into that deck. This was one of the first ones I saw. Human Tribal, definitely a heavy support in this deck, and should be interesting. We're getting a lot of cool cards, including this one. And the last commander, or the second to last commander leading off the decks, is Kalamax the Stormsire. This is one green, blue, red, so a teamer colored one for a legendary creature, Elemental Dinosaur 4/4. It says when you cast your first instant spell each turn, if Kalamax is tapped, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. Whenever you copy an instant spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Kalamax. So it's a 4/4 dinosaur that cares about instants on your turn and will let you copy them as long as it's tapped. There's a few different ways that you can tap this, things like Cryptolith Rites to help your Kalamax cast your spells by having it make mana. It's a very interesting design philosophy for this card of a Spells Matters deck also needing a creature to be tapped to help copy stuff. So I guess it all depends on how easy can you get Kalamax tapped and what are your payoffs once you do. And last up we have Cathreal Aspect Warper. This is two and white, black, green for so Abzan for a legendary creature Nightmare Insect 3/3. And it says when Cathreal enters the battlefield, put a flying counter on any creature you control if a creature in your graveyard has flying. And then you repeat the process for first strike, double strike, death touch, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, reach, and trample and vigilance. So if they have almost any keyword, then put a +1/+1 counter on Cathreal for each counter put on a creature this way. So this is essentially Soul Flayer as a commander. Soul Flayer is a card that has a similar effect where it gains any keywords for creatures in your graveyard with keywords. And there's kind of keyword slash counter tribal throughout this and Ikoria, where keywords are now counters that can be put on creatures as well. So I have a feeling that this deck could be fairly good. Abzan self-mill with, a creature sub-theme is definitely something that those colors like to do and that this deck will want to be doing. The one problem is it's a 5-mana 3/3 where all its abilities depend on what's actually in your graveyard, so it's going to feel really bad when you cast this as just a 5-mana 3/3. Continuing on, we have one of the other possible Jeskai commanders that'll be in the deck. It's Akim the Soaring Wind. This is two and Jeskai, so blue, red, white for a legendary creature, bird dinosaur with flying. It's a 3/4, and it says whenever you create one or more creature tokens for the first time each turn, create a 1/1 white bird creature token with flying. And three and a Jeskai, creature tokens you control gain double strike until end of turn. So the first time I read this card, I was like, wow, awesome. A Jeskai token matters commander, or another one, because we have Kaikar. The one unfortunate thing is how this card is worded. It says whenever you create one or more tokens. So that means any effect that you have in this deck that creates a token, regardless of how many tokens it makes, is only going to net you one bird token off this. So I actually like this better inside of the deck of like a Kaikar or something else to give you more tokens, and then to, I think, use its activated ability hopefully to kind of finish the game by giving all your tokens double strike. I'm not super fond of this as the head of a deck because of how they worded it. Although I do think they might have had to word it that way because your tokens could get kind of out of hand. Then again, as you'll see, there's other token commanders that kind of are still just going to get out of hand. Next up, we have Zaraxa the Exemplary. And this is one and a Sultai, so black, green, blue, for a legendary creature, Nightmare Hydra 2/3, with death touch and tap, add 2 mana of any one color. So already really interesting, a 2-mana mana dork with death touch, but wait, there's more. It says whenever you cast a spell with X in its mana cost, create a 0/0 green Hydra creature token, then put X +1/+1 counters on it. So this card is doing a lot. If you're not familiar with Hydras in Magic, pretty much every Hydra is an X converted mana cost in there somewhere, determining the Hydra's power and toughness. And Hydra commanders in the past are usually mono green, or you have something like Roshi and the Meanderer giving you access to red and tapping for a bunch of mana for creatures. But I really like this because A, it gives you access to black, which opens up another color for you, and you can do a mix of Hydra Tribal and X spell matters and still get rewarded both ways. So I think this is a great commander. I really like it. I think it's super versatile and does exactly what all of its abilities want to do very well. Next up we have Kelsine the Plague. This is just Mardu for a 2-2 legendary creature human assassin with vigilance and haste. And it says Kelsine the Plague gets +1/+1 for each experience counter you have. So a return of experience counters. And it says, Kaldrin deals one damage to target creature you don't control. When that creature dies this turn, you get an experience counter. So with tap and untap shenanigans, you could probably get Kaldrin very big. And there's the obvious synergy of giving, or sorry, Kelsine, my mistake, of giving it death touch and just pinging creatures to guarantee that they die. This one, unfortunately, is probably not going to get into my Alicia deck. It doesn't really synergize with the deck other than it being a human, but still a super cool commander nonetheless. Next up we have Xyrus the Writhing Storm, which these names are something else. This is 2 and teamer for a legendary creature Snake Leviathan 3/5 with flying, and whenever an opponent draws a card, except for the first one they draw in each of their draw steps, create a 1/1 green snake creature token. And whenever Xyrus the Writhing Storm deals combat damage to a player, you and that player each draw that many cards. So this is a teamer token card draw tribal commander, which is super cool. I'm not exactly sure what your end goal would be for this leading your deck, other than playing a lot of wheels and making a lot of snakes, but nonetheless, this card is extremely interesting. I'm really curious to see what people do with this as a deck. I really want to see some people play this because it looks very cool. Next up, we have Tayam Luminous Enigma. This is 1 and Abzan for a 3/3 legendary creature Nightmare Beast. And it says each other creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional vigilance counter on it. So as you see, keyword counters. And it says remove 3 counters from among creatures you control. Any kind of counters, doesn't matter. Put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a permanent card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this is just a solid Abzan commander. It does a lot of what Abzan wants to do. Counter synergies, you can even just do +1/+1 counters and reanimation. It is a little bit weird that it limits you to playing a lot of things with 3 CMC or less, but it does let you get permanents, so you can get things like lands, artifacts, creatures, so it doesn't matter what goes in your graveyard, as long as it's 3 CMC or less, you can get it back. And next up, we have the return of another commander mechanic, the partner with mechanic. So there's partner commanders and partner with commanders. The partner commanders can partner with any other commander that just says partner on it. So these are things like Thrasios, Timna, Vial Smasher. Then you have partner commanders that can only be paired with certain other commanders that they name. So first up we have Tyran, Champion of Freedom, and Silvar, Devourer of the Free. So this is your Mardu partners. And Tyran is a legendary creature, human soldier 3/3, that has partner with Silvar the Devourer. So when either of these creatures enter the battlefield, you can target a player, it doesn't have to be yourself, and you can put the other one from your deck into your hand. Now obviously if they're in the command zone, that doesn't really matter, but regardless, allow you to tutor for one of them if these aren't your commanders, they're just inside of a deck that can run both of them. So Byron says, at the beginning of your end step, if you attacked this turn, create a 1/1 white human soldier creature token. And Silvar, which is 3 black and a red for a 4/2 legendary creature cat nightmare, has menace and says, sacrifice a human, put a +1/+1 counter on Silvar, devour the free. It gains indestructible until end of turn. So obviously these two work very well together. Trin making the fodder for Silvar to devour it. The one thing I don't like about this pair is the timing of when the stuff is made. So yes, Silvar has menace, so it is harder to block anyway. But it's a 4-mana commander with no keywords into a 5-mana commander that just has menace. And the token is made at the beginning of your end step if you attacked. Now, you don't have to attack with these creatures. You can attack with anything. But it is a little bit of a feels bad when the token is made, in my opinion. Regardless. Still interesting. I like the partner with mechanic. I like that they play very well inside the 99 of decks, instead of where the partners really only play well as your commanders. So I like seeing partner with as a return. Also, these ones tend to be a lot less abusable and broken. Next up, we have Helden, Avid Arcanist, which is 2 and a blue for a 1/4 legendary creature, human wizards, and it partners with Paco, Arcane Retriever, which is 3 red and a green for a legendary creature, Elemental Hound, 3/3. So Helden says, you may play non-creature cards from exile with fetch counters on them if you exiled them, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. And you're probably wondering how you exile cards. Well, that's what Paco's here for. It says, whenever Paco attacks, exile the top card of each player's library and put a fetch counter on each of them. Put a 1/1 counter on Paco for each non-creature card exiled this way. And Paco also has haste. So I think these two play very well together. And inside of the teamer colors, I think they're doing a lot of what you already want to be doing, where you have tons of play your opponent's deck for value type of things through enchantments that let you draw off of people's deck in red. You have Mind Stylation effects in blue. You have things like Atali as well in red, the kind of red's version of card advantage, which is kind of this exile, play till end of turn, or play other people's thing. So I think these are really cool together inside of a teamer shell. And it's a little bit awkward that Paco exiles the cards, but you have to have Helden to play those cards. But nonetheless, Paco's just going to get pretty big. It's a 5-mana 3/3 with haste that has the potential to immediately get 4 counters on it if you exile all non-creature cards. So you're swinging in for actually kind of a magic number with Commander. You're swinging in for 7 the first time Paco comes down, potentially, which is a 3-hit clock for Commander damage. So pretty cool. Next up, we have Nakira, Lair Scavenger. This is 2 and a black for a legendary creature, human cleric, 2/2 with menace, who partners with Yannick, Scavenging Sentinel, which is a 2 green and white for a 3/3 legendary creature, hyena beast with vigilance. So looking back at Nakira, it says, whenever another creature you control leaves the battlefield, if it had 1 or more counters on it, you draw a card and lose 1 life. And then Yannick says, whenever Yannick, Scavenging Scoundrel, enters the battlefield, exile another creature you control until Yannick leaves the battlefield. When you do, distribute +1/+1 counters among the number of target creatures, where X is the exile creature's power. So you play Yannick, you exile something very big, you distribute a bunch of counters, and then you get all those creatures to leave the battlefield somehow, or when they do just leave, and then you draw a bunch of cards with Nakira. These two play very well together, and I like that there's a Abzan kind of counters blink strategy going on here, because You can blink Yannick, and if Yannick has counters on it, you're also going to draw because it just says when the creature leaves the battlefield, whenever another creature you control leaves the battlefield with Nakira, it doesn't say die. So if the creature you're exiling with Yannick has counters on it already, you're still getting the benefit off of Nakira. So I like these two a lot. I think that is also a very interesting deck. All of these partner commanders are going to make some very, very cool stuff. Next up, we have Khazzar, Ruthless Stalker. This is three and a green for a legendary creature, human warrior 3/3, that says partners with Ukima, Stalking Shadow. Stalking Shadow is one blue and a black for a legendary creature, Whale Wolf 2/2, which is very cool. And Ukima, Stalking Shadow can't be blocked. And it says when Ukima leaves the battlefield, it deals X damage to target player and you gain X life, where X is its power. And its partner says whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you put a plus one counter on that creature. So Khazzar helps pump your Ukima. Ukima can't be blocked. And then whenever they kill Ukima, you dome your opponent for a bunch of damage and you gain a bunch of life. Once again, they really designed these partners well to play a very solid game with each other. And next up, probably the two that I'm going to talk about the least because they are the Command Zone's spoiler cards. They were in charge of spoiling the entire Jeskai deck, and they did a huge deep dive on these two. And they know their stuff. So if you want to check out more about these two, go watch Jimmy and Josh at the Command Zone. But it's Braylon Skyshark Rider, which is three and a red for a 3/3 legendary creature human shaman that partners with Shabazz the Skyshark, which is three white and blue for a flying 3/3 legendary creature shark bird. So Shabazz says whenever you draw a card, put a plus one counter on Shabazz, and you gain one life. And it has hybrid blue-white, target human gains flying until end of turn, which pairs very nicely with Braylon since it's a human. And Braylon says whenever you discard a card, put a plus one counter on Braylon, and it deals one damage to each opponent. And has red, target shark gains trample until end of turn. So Shabazz helps Braylon get in there for damage. Braylon helps Shabazz get more damage in. Shabazz gets bigger. And you have this very neat synergy with discard and draw cards both benefiting you. I think these are two of the creatures that, as far as the partner with creatures go, they work the best potentially inside their own decks. Braylon works very well inside a bunch of mono red decks that have discard matters because most of mono red, the way that they get cards is by discarding cards to draw more cards. And Shabazz works pretty well inside of a blue white deck caring about life gain, or a blue white X deck caring about life gain as well. And there's a lot of overlap with humans. It's one of the biggest tribes in all of Magic, so Shabazz's activated ability is not always going to be wasted. Obviously, not too many sharks, especially in mono red, so Braylon, maybe not, unless you're running changelings. So, those are at the current moment all of the new legendary creatures from the Commander 2020 decks. There are a few reprints, which I might talk about some of those later, but those are all of the new ones. So moving into the new rares from the Commander 2020 set, we have Verge Rangers, which is two and a white for a human scout 3/3 with first strike that says you may look at the top of your library at any time. As long as your opponent controls more lands than you may play lands from the top of your library. So this, I think, is a very solid card. It helps you in mono white or Boros get lands off the top of your library, which is normally an effect you only see in green on some of the best green cards in Commander. Oracle of Moldiah, Courser of Kruphix. Now, Oracle does give you an extra land drop, sure, but I really think this is a step in the right direction for white. Granted, It does rely on your opponents having more lands than you, which is kind of this new thing with white that they've done in this set, is we're going to give white the ability to draw cards and get more lands, but it requires on people out-ramping them, which is kind of fine because most times as the white deck, you are getting out-ramped, especially if there's a green deck at the table with you. So I like that card quite a bit. Next up, we have Capricoprio, which is X and a green for a creature Goat Hydra 0/0, and it says it enters the battlefield with X plus one counters. It has two, put a plus one counter on Capricoprio. Then you can choose again which player is attacking. Only the player who Capricoprio is attacking can activate this ability and only during the declare attack step. And he cannot attack his own controller. So this is a very weird card. It's kind of a, I'm gonna put a bunch of mana on it after I just got attacked, but now I'm gonna hit someone back, and I just have to hope that they don't pick me. It's interesting that it's in mono green because that's not really a color combination with like that you normally see for stuff like this. We're more used to seeing that in Jeskai colors with things like Zendru or black red with Xantcha, but there's a lot of interesting things in this set of making your opponent's creatures do stuff that they don't want them to do. Next up, we have Crystalline Resonance. This is two and a blue for an enchantment. It says whenever you cycle a card, you may have Crystalline Resonance become a copy of another target permanent until your next turn, except it has this ability. I think this card is super sweet. It says another target permanent. So that's anything on the battlefield. Planeswalkers, lands, artifacts, enchantments, creatures, and it also doesn't say ones that you control. I can't begin to imagine the shenanigans that that card is going to be able to do. It does require you to cycle a card, but then again, there's an entire deck in Commander 2020 built around cycling. And cycling is kind of this mechanic that a lot of people want to work, but it's just never gotten there. This could be the year. Next up, we have Deadly Trick. This is three and a black for an instant. It says, if you control a commander, you may cast this card without paying its mana cost. It says, exile target creature. So there's an entire cycle in these decks of these, if you control your commander, you may cast them for free cards. Deadly Trick being a the black one. And it's four mana for an exile effect, which is not terrible. It's in mono black, so giving a little bit of help to there or black decks that don't also have white. Pretty cool. And I kind of like this if you control your commander cards. They're all fairly costed, I think, for just casting them if you don't control your commander. But I think they're very strong in the I do happen to control my commander category. So I like all of these cards a lot. I don't think any of them are broken. So yeah, solid new cycle added in here. Next up, we have a very weird artifact. It's a three and a red for Lava Brink Floodgates. It's an artifact that taps to add red red, and it says at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player may put a doom counter on Lava Brink Floodgates or remove a doom counter from it. Then, if it has three or more doom counters on it, sacrifice Lava Brink Floodgates. When you do, it deals six damage to each creature. I'm not a huge fan of this card. At absolute best, it's a four mana rock that taps for double red. Okay, that's fine. However, your opponents can just decide to make you waste four mana and lose your double red mana rock. Because if they don't have a bunch of creatures that die to this, or they don't really care that a bunch of their creatures die, your opponents can just go put a doom counter on it, put a doom counter on it, put a doom counter on it, kaboom. Now you have no mana rock. It's very telegraphed, and it's just not something I'm into. I think in mono red decks, for four mana, you're much better off even just playing the four mana artifacts that tap for two colorless, like Hedron Archive or a Warren Power Stone or something like that. Because a lot of the times you just want mana. You don't specifically need double red when you're trying to build up a lot of mana. But it's an interesting card. I'm curious to see if there's going to be more of these artifacts in here. Next up, we have Selective Adaptation. Four green green for a sorcery. It says reveal the top seven cards of your library. Choose from among them a card with flying, a card with first strike, and so on for double strike, death touch, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, reach, trample, and vigilance. Jeez. Put one of the chosen cards onto the battlefield, the other chosen card into your hand, and the rest into your graveyard. So this is look at seven, pick whatever's best in the situation, put it onto the battlefield, probably pick whatever's second best and put it in your hand, or pass and then dump everything else in the graveyard to try and use it later. Obviously, it works very well with things like Tamiya and Cathrill, and it's going to be in those in that deck. It's a cool card if you're running a ton of creatures and all of those creatures have keywords on them and all the keywords are different. I don't know if six mana is worth it for that unless the creatures you're running all have multiple keywords and your deck is full of things like Zatulpa that has three giant hard to deal with keywords on it. So, not my type of card. Next up is Barracuda of the Tide. This is three and a U, three and a blue, sorry, for a 3/4 fish that says any player may cast spells as though they had flash. Your opponents cannot cast spells during your turn. I don't like this card for a few reasons. A, it's a creature. If this was an enchantment, I would like it a little bit more, but it's a creature. Creatures are very easy to get rid of, especially in Commander. This dies to tons of removal spells. It's a fish, it's four mana. It's a interesting lock piece. The problem is, I don't if I'm playing something like this, I want to be the only one gaining these effects. I want to have something like Vedalken Ori, Leyline of Anticipation, or a Teferi on the battlefield. Either three mana Teferi or the creature Teferi, where I'm the only one gaining this benefit. I don't like giving my opponents the benefit, with the one caveat being they can't cast spells during my turn. It's still giving my opponents flash on everybody else's turns. But I'm not super into that card. Next up, we have Daring Fiend Bonder. This is three and a black for a human warlock with haste. It's a 5/1, and it has the worst text of all cards in Magic that says it must attack each combat if able. It has one and a black, exile it from your graveyard, put an indestructible counter on target creature. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. I don't think that the combined total of four of six mana is worth getting one creature to be indestructible. There's much easier ways to get your creatures indestructible with equipments or other things in Commander than suicide attacking a 5/1 into an opponent to then wait all the way for your turn to then exile it from your graveyard. Not a good card. Next up is Spellfire Phoenix. This is three red red for a Phoenix with flying, and it says when Spellfire Phoenix enters the battlefield, you may return an instant or sorcery card with cycling from your graveyard to your hand. At the beginning of each end step, if you have cycled at least two cards this turn, return Spellfire Phoenix from your graveyard to your hand. So it's obviously only good inside of a cycling deck. It does have the whole kind of new strategy they're going with Phoenixes, where instead of relying on damage being dealt by them, it relies more on instants and sorceries. We've seen this with Arclight Phoenix. So it's an interesting card. Phoenixes are kind of hard to tell. They always look kind of dumpy, and then some of them turn out to be really good. But generally, not in Commander. So, cool card design-wise. I don't think it's very good, though. Next up, we have Fangbreaker. This is four green green for a beast with mutate for three and a green. And it says, when this creature mutates, destroy target non-creature permanent. Its controller creates a 3/3 green beast token. It's multiple Beast Withins, but if I want to play Beast Within, I'd rather just play Beast Within, because Beast Within can also hit creatures. I think that it's super expensive for a 6/6 that doesn't really do anything, and it has almost Beast Within, but not exactly Beast Within. I'd rather just play Beast Within or be in green-white and be also get to play Generous Gift, so I'm off it. Next up, we have Dismantling Wave. This is 2 and a white for sorcery that says for each opponent, destroy up to 1 target artifact or enchantment that player controls. Or it has cycling 6 white-white, which is discard this card, draw a card. And when you cycle Dismantling Wave, destroy all artifacts and enchantments. I'm not a fan of this. I think in white, you really want your artifacts and enchantments, and I'd rather pay 4 mana for something like Return to Dust, where I can exile 2 artifacts or enchantments. I kind of like this card just for the 2 and a white, where you get to blow up something from everybody, but I don't really like that if I spend 8 mana to cycle this, which in white, unless I'm also paired with green, isn't usually coming from my lands. It's most likely coming from my artifacts, that I'm going to blow up the whole board of artifacts. I'd rather just play Austere Command for 5 mana, which, yes, it doesn't cycle, but it can also hit creatures if that's what I need to get rid of. So, not a fan. Next up, we have Aeon Frolicker. This is 2 blue-blue for an elemental otter with flying. When Aeon Frolicker enters the battlefield, if you cast it, target opponent takes an extra turn after this one. Until your next turn, you and planeswalkers you control gain protection from that player. This is a cool card. It's also a 5/5 with flying. It's a cool card, but I think it's a bad card. It's a 4-mana 5/5 flying that forces you, if you cast it, which it's not like you want to cheat this into play. You give your opponent an extra turn, and yeah, you have protection from that opponent, so they can't use something like a all-out attack or a damage. It kind of seems like a protection card where you know that your opponent can most likely win the game, but you're going to stop them from killing you when they win the game. It seems like it depends a lot on how your opponents plan to win the game. So I'm not really sure about it. We don't usually see cards that allow you to give your opponents extra turns. So it fits in a very weird space. Next up, we have Species Specialist. This is 2 black-black for a human warrior 2/3 that says, as Species Specialist enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Whenever a creature of the chosen type dies, you may draw a card. This card is slotting perfectly into my Alicia deck. I don't know exactly what spot it's going to take, but I love this card. I like it because you don't have to play it in Human Tribal, because you can play this in any tribal deck that has black. This one just happens to be a human warrior, so it might not gain some bonuses from the deck, but it will allow you to gain a lot of bonuses from the deck itself. I'm all about this card. Next up, we have Fireflux Squad. This is 3 and a red for a 4/3 human soldier with haste that says, when Fireflux Squad attacks, you may exile another target attacking creature you control. If you do, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card. Put that card onto the battlefield tapped and attacking, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So this card does a lot of interesting things, and I think this is almost a build-around card inside of a red deck for a few key reasons. The card that comes out of your library that goes on the battlefield stays on the battlefield. This card has no line of text that says, until end step, sacrifice it, put it back into your hand, none of that stuff. The caveat is, the card that you exile with Fireflux Squad doesn't come back. You straight up exile it, and it has to be another target attacking creature. So it swaps one creature for hopefully a better creature. So I think if you build your deck in a certain way to utilize things like making tokens or having creatures that have a benefit, but then like a good ETB or a good attack trigger, you can then dump that creature for just another creature that's going to hit way harder, a Blightsteel Colossus, a really big Eldrazi. Granted, it's already tapped in attacking, so you don't, so just like Ilharg, you don't get the attack trigger benefits, but still, if you dump a 1/1 token and all of a sudden Windmill Slam a 13/13 off the top of your deck, you don't really need a lot of attack triggers at that point. Next up, we have Glade Muse. This is 2 and a green for a 2/4 beast. This says whenever a player casts a spell, if it's not their turn, that player draws a card. This card is super weird. It's a mono green creature that rewards you for having instants in your own deck. I have no idea how to deal with this card because this is not a card that you put in the average green deck. It's almost like a control card, yet it's vulnerable because it's a 2/4 beast. This card confuses me. It seems like it should be a color pie break. I don't know what the philosophy is behind this card, but it's weird. Next up, we have Herald of the Forgotten. This is 6 white-white for a creature cat beast with flying. It's a 6/6. And it says when Herald of the Forgotten enters the battlefield, if you cast it, return any number of target permanent cards with cycling abilities from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this is like a huge cycling reanimator payoff, which I think is really cool. And this gets back any permanent with cycling. So creatures, artifacts, lands with cycling. It is 8 mana, but if you can cheat this into play, depending on how many cycling permanents you have in your deck, it could be a huge thing because it also returns them to the battlefield. So if those cards naturally don't come in tapped, they're not coming in tapped off Herald of the Forgotten. So this giant cat beast might be the cycling payoff that you're looking for. Next up, we have Decoy Gambit. This is 2 and a blue for an instant. It says for each opponent, choose up to one target creature that player controls, then return that creature to its owner's hand, unless its controller has you draw a card. I think this card is very bad. I think if you're bouncing a creature, it's got to be a creature you want to get off the battlefield, and they're just going to let you draw a card. At best, this is 3 mana for draw 3, which might be a little above rate. I don't really see a world where you're going to return creatures. So I think this is honestly just a 3 mana, potentially draw 3, but it also could be a 3 mana draw 0, a 3 mana draw 1. I do say that I like cards that have options, but I like my options to be good, and I think these options are just bad. So no, it's a no for me. Next up, we have Agitator Ant. For 2 and a red, you get a insect 2/2 that says at the beginning of your end step, each player may put 2 +1/+1 counters on a creature they control. Goad each creature that had counters put on it this way. And goad is a mechanic that says until your next turn, those creatures attack other they attack each combat and attack a player other than you have able. So Agitator Ant is gonna put creatures or put counters on your opponent's creatures at the trade-off that they then can't swing that creature at you unless you're the only person left, which in that case you don't want to play Agitator Ant. So there's a mechanic of goad throughout this set, which is an interesting mechanic to bring back. It forces combat, it forces people to make decisions. So this isn't the best goad card, I don't think, but I still think it's an okay card, especially in something like a force combat deck where you just want everyone attacking all the time. So this is gonna kill people real quick. Next up, we have Call of the Coppercoats. This is 2 and a white for an instant with Strive. It says this spell costs 1 and a white more to cast for each target beyond the first. It says choose any number of target opponents. Create X 1/1 white human soldier creature tokens, where X is the number of creatures those opponents control. So I am not a huge fan of the Strive cost on this card, but I think this card has potential if you're in a tokens deck. I don't think you really care what kind of tokens they are, but for two and a green, if someone floods the boards, floods the board with a lot of creatures, you can then flood your board with a lot of creatures. I like that this is an instant. If it was a sorcery, I think this would be almost unplayable. But as an instant, it's kind of a surprise, I have blockers type of trick. So it's okay. Next up, we have Nascent Metamorph. This is one and a blue for a shapeshifter 1/1. It says, when Nascent Metamorph attacks or blocks, target opponent reveals cards from the top of their library until they reveal a creature. Nascent Metamorph becomes a copy of that creature until end of turn. Then that player puts all cards revealed this way on the bottom of their library in a random order. So this is one of those cards that truly depends on what your opponents are playing, which depends on how good this card is. If your opponents are playing some big creatures, this card's good. If your opponents aren't playing very many creatures, or most of their creatures are something like mana dorks, this card's very bad. That being said, I think this card is going to more often lean to being bad because it's so random. It's a fun card, but I don't think it necessarily translates into being a good card. Next up, we have Boneyard Microdax. This is two and a black for a star fungus. It says Boneyard Microdax power and toughness are each equal to the number of other creature cards in your graveyard. And it has scavenge, which is an old ability that's... Its scavenge is four and a black, and it says, exile this card from your graveyard, put a number of 1/1 counters on it equal to the card's power on target creature. Scavenge only as a sorcery. So this is a 5-man ability that can make one of your other creatures very big because this card has the potential to be very big. So it's an okay card. There's probably decks that want it. I think it's probably a shoe-in for like a fungus deck, because when all that stuff dies, you have a way to hopefully make use of them. Other than that, I don't really see this going in most other decks. Next up, we have Deflecting Swat. This is two and a red for an instant. It says, if you control a commander, you may cast this spell without paying its mana cost. It says, you may choose new targets for target spell or ability. So this is a 3-mana red redirect spell that has the potential to be cast for free. So I actually kind of like this one. It's not the best because you don't really want to be spending 3 mana on it, but it has the ability to really get people, especially if you're in something like an Izzet counter, like a counter burn type of deck where you get to cast this for free. You get into like a mini counter war, but because you now have mana up, you're going to win the counter war. So also just in a red deck, it's a way to really get people because not a lot of people are going to be expecting that. Next up, we have Ravenous Gigantotherium. This is 5 green-green for a beast with Devour 3. And Devour says, as this enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice any number of creatures. This creature enters the battlefield with 3 times that many +1/+1 counters. So if you sacrifice 1 creature, you get 3, 2 creatures, 6, so on and so on, math. And it says, when Ravenous Gigantotherium enters the battlefield, it deals X damage divided as you choose among up to X target creatures, where X is its power. Each of those creatures deals damage equal to its power to Ravenous Gigantotherium. This card has a lot of words on it, and I think most of them are bad. It's 7 mana for a creature that is gonna force you to sacrifice a bunch of stuff, or it's a 7-mana 3/3 with no relevant abilities on it, no keywords, nothing like that, and is most likely going to die for your 7 mana, and it might kill a few things that aren't yours because you're gonna have to sacrifice your stuff. So unless you are gonna be able to sacrifice a massive amount of tokens to essentially wipe the entire rest of the board, this card is probably very bad. Next up is Cartographer's Hawk. This is 1 and a white for a bird with flying, and it's a 2-1. And it says, when Cartographer's Hawk deals combat damage to a player who controls more lands than you, return it to its owner's hand. If you do, you may search your library for a planes card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So this card is a little bit of a miss compared to, I think, compared to something like Verge Rangers, which we talked about earlier. Because it's a 2-1, it doesn't have haste because it's mono white. It bounces back to your hand, which, to be fair, can give you some benefits, such as if you're playing this card in, like, Oketra, where you want a lot of your creatures to be able to get recast because it makes you more tokens. But I think this one is a little bit underpowered. It's also a 2-1 for 2. So I think they went a little safe with that one, and they probably could have pushed it a little bit more. Next up, we have Heavenly Whale. This is 4BB for a elemental whale with delve and flying. It's a 3-3. It says, when Heavenly Whale attacks, you may put an instant or sorcery card exiled by Heavenly Whale into your hand. So, I'm not a huge fan of this card. Best case scenario, it's 2BB for a 3-3 flyer, which isn't terrible. And you exile 4 instants and sorcery cards from your graveyard with the potential to get them back into your hand. If you're playing a deck that has a lot of instants and sorceries, especially in blue, a lot of times you want them in your graveyard because there's ways to utilize them when they are still in your graveyard. And generally, if you're casting your delve spells, you're only exiling the ones in your graveyard that you know you're not going to want to cast for the rest of the game, or are going to be the worst option to cast throughout the rest of the game. Your least efficient card draw spells, your bounce spells a lot of the times, things like that. But most often when you delve, you're getting rid of the stuff you can't get back. Things that your colors can't get back, your lands, stuff like that. So I like the effect. I think it's cool, but I think it kind of goes against what you want to do. Next up is Mind Leecher. This is 4BB for a nightmare, 5/5 with flying, with mutate for 4BB. And it says, whenever this card mutates, exile the top card of each opponent's library face down. You may look at and play those cards for as long as they remain exiled. Unless you're able to spam mutate cards onto here, I think there are plenty other mono black effects and black X effects that already do this and or other versions of this better, such as Gonti by itself does this better and cheaper. So unless you just really want a ton of redundant effects in this, sure. But then it also depends on how many mutate cards you have. So I think the card's kind of bad. Next up is Molten Echoes. 2RR for an enchantment. It says, as Molten Echoes enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Whenever a non-token creature of the chosen type enters the battlefield under your control, create a token that's a copy of that creature. That token gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. I think this card is very good. It allows you to turn creatures that don't have haste into haste versions for at least a turn. I can see this card killing and or combo killing a lot of people. So yeah, and the cool thing is you don't even have to attack with this token. I'm imagining something like you have a red creature that has a tap up, or not even a red creature. You're in a deck that can play this with red, like a teamer pod list, and you have something like a Vanifar. So you can play your Vanifar down. It makes the copy. You sacrifice the non-token one because that one's not going to have haste, and it's also a legend, so you got to apply by the legend rule. But now your Vanifar has haste. Obviously, 4 mana is a little bit of an expensive for that effect, but I think you can do a lot of cool things with Molten Echoes. Next up, we have Obscuring Haze. This is the green version of the free casting card. It's 2 and a green for an instant. It just fogs. That's all it does. Prevent all damage that will be dealt this turn by creatures your opponent controls, and you cast it for free if you control a commander. 3 mana fog isn't exactly where you want to be. However, I think the ability to cast this for free makes the 3 mana worth it for this card. So it does what fogs do. Next up is the white version, Flawless Maneuver. This is 2 and a white. Once again, if you control your commander, you may cast a spell without paying its mana cost. It says creatures you control gain indestructible until end of turn. It's fine if you want indestructibility tricks in your deck, especially ones that you cast for free. If you don't want that, then you're not playing this card. So, yeah. Another sort of cycle that is in this are these uncommon enchantments that goad creatures and give certain benefits. So first up is the blue one. It's Psychic Impetus. It says enchant creature, notably not enchant creature you control, so you can put this on your opponent's creatures. And it says enchant creature gets +2/+2 and is goaded. It says whenever enchanted creature attacks, you scry 2. So there's this one. There's the black one, which is 2 and a black. It's Parasitic Impetus. It also gives +2/+2. It says whenever the enchanted creature attacks, its controller loses 2 life. You gain 2 life. The white one, Martial Impetus, 2 and a white. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1. It says whenever enchanted creature attacks, each other creature that's attacking one of your opponents gets +1/+1 until end of turn. We have the green one, Predatory Impetus, which is 4 and a green, more expensive, but it gives +3/+3, and it says the enchanted creature must be blocked if able. And Shiny Impetus, which is 2 and a red, enchanted creature has +2/+2. It says whenever enchanted creature attacks, you create a treasure token. So out of all of these, I personally think the red one and the black one are the best. The life loss, life gain off the black one is pretty relevant if you stick this onto your opponent's creature. And remember, they're goaded, so they cannot attack you. And I think the red one is really good because you get treasures, which just translates into mana. Martial Impetus is actually, I think, better in a deck where you want to stick it on your own creatures and try and blow up everybody at the same time. I think the green one is the worst. +3/+3 and allure effect is okay, but it's also the only one that's 5 mana. So, yeah. And then I think the blue one is second to worst. I think Scry 2 is, it's okay compared to the rest of the mechanics. So I think red's the best, black is second, white is better or worse depending on if you're putting it on your own creature or your opponent's, then blue, and then I think the green one is probably the worst. Next up we have Netherborn Altar. This is 1 and a red for an artifact. It says, put a soul counter on Netherborn Altar. Put your commander into your hand from the command zone. Then you lose 3 life for each soul counter on Netherborn Altar. I think this card is really only good in something like a Hakan deck or a Phage deck or something like a Tetsamok, where you need the creature in your hand and or in a zone that isn't your command zone, and you don't want to waste the mana casting it. So I think playing this in like a Tetsamok deck to immediately put your commander into your hand for 2 mana and 3 life to be able to use Tetsamok's ability to then blow up a bunch of creatures is really good. I think this in a Phage deck is another way to win the game with Phage. So it has some interesting things, but I don't think this is a card you slam in every black deck. So yeah. Next up is Curious Herd. This is 3 and a green for an instant. Choose target opponent. You create X-3-3 green beast creature tokens where X is the number of artifacts that player controls. This could be really good in a green deck if you're going against heavy artifacts. There's probably a ratio of how many artifacts on the battlefield you need for this to make it worth it for the tokens. But I think if you're spending 4 mana and you're making anywhere between like 3 and 6 tokens, this is probably an okay card. It's not the greatest card ever, but I've also seen a lot worse cards than that. Next up is Wartime Broker. This is 3 and a red for a human warrior. Whenever one or more creatures attack an opponent or a planeswalker an opponent controls, those creatures gain menace until end of turn. There are some menace matters things I've seen throughout the set so far, this being another one. I'm not exactly sure how to evaluate this one. It does make your board very hard to block. So that's good. So if you're definitely trying to get through damage with your stuff, this seems like a solid card to have. And since we're going a little bit long, then I will only talk about obviously the commander cards in this. I'm not going to dive into the Ikoria cards, but I do want to mention a few notable reprints that are in these decks. First up is Crop Rotation. This is one green for an instant. It says, as an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a land. Search your library for a card, put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So, Crop Rotation is a great card for mana fixing and doing a lot of lands shenanigans. I like seeing this as a reprint. It wasn't a super expensive card, but I think it's very cool that they're putting it in there. They're putting a little bit more skill-intensive cards in these commander decks. And I think the commander decks and the set in general are going to be very skill intensive, which I like. Next up is the Locust God. This is four blue and a red for a legendary creature god, 4/4 with flying. It says, whenever you draw a card, create a 1/1 blue and red insect creature token with flying and haste. Two blue red, draw a card, then discard a card. And when the Locust God dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. Not the most expensive of this God cycle, but I think this is a perfect one to put into the decks. It fits very well. And this is like kind of a huge power boost to that Jeskai deck that it's going to be in, because this is the type of card you would look to put into that deck to begin with as an upgrade card to put in there. Also, all of the decks come with Arcane Signet. This is two mana for an artifact. Add one mana of any color in your commander's color identity. This is a huge card. This is exactly what people wanted. Everyone was saying, if you're gonna print Arcane Signet, why can't you just put Arcane Signet in all the commander decks? Because it was going to be a card that was going to get stupid expensive, and I'm glad that they windmill slammed it into all the decks. I love the reprints that are in these decks so far, especially the last card that we're going to talk about today, which is Fluctuator, probably the most important card in all of the Cycling Matters decks out there. This is two mana for an artifact. This is cycling abilities you activate cost up to two less to activate. This makes a ton of cards either 100% free to cycle, such as the dual colored cycling lands that cycle for two, a lot of the cards that either have some form of land cycling, so plain cycling, mountain cycling, forest cycling, etc., are usually two colorless. And this just hugely reduces a lot of the cards on that have cycling out there. And this card, as soon as people saw that Cycling Matters was a deck about 2 days ago, bought out most copies of it, which is a good buy, I think. And the card jumped up to about $30, and then immediately today, all hopes were dashed, and this got reprinted. Although, in my opinion, I like the old art better, but still, I love that this is in the deck because now you get the entire deck and the fluctuator for $30 instead of spending one mana on an artifact that you desperately need if you are going to play a Cycling Matters deck. A plus looking out there, Wizards. So, we have talked about a ton of cards today, and it did take me a little bit longer than I wanted to. So I will have another bonus episode before next Wednesday going over the Ikoria layer of Behemoth cards specifically, talking more about Mutate, talking about another new mechanic, a pretty divisive mechanic in that sense, and a bunch more legends and cool cards from Ikoria. And then on Wednesday, probably more spoiler talk, more commander cards, more Ikoria cards. Who knows what's going to happen? But anyway, thanks for listening to this bonus episode. I'm glad to put this out for you guys, get my thoughts out there. If you want to find this cast, hear any of my other episodes, or hear future episodes, you can find me anywhere that you can find podcasts. I'm on Anchor, I'm on iTunes, Spotify, at DeckBoxCast. You can find me on Twitter at NicNax96. That's NicNax96. And most importantly, like always, don't forget your sleeves, don't forget your playmat, but most importantly, don't forget your deck box cast. See ya!